From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is Minh Thao, editor and broadcaster in VOA's Vietnamese service. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Wan Ngo Yusadi. She's the author of a new memoir of Monkey Bridges and Banh Mi Sandwiches. Wan was born in Saigon before it fell to the North Vietnamese in April 1975, but grew up in the Mekong Delta, where her family was exiled after the war. When she was 11, the family escaped Vietnam as part of the mass exodus of boat refugees. Her exquisitely written memoir describes her life before and after the fall of Saigon, taking us through her childhood in an orchard in the Mekong Delta, her harrowing journey to a refugee camp in Malaysia, and her ultimate exodus from Vietnam to the United States. In 1984, she and her family settled in a small Texas town where her father, a dyed-in-the-wool entrepreneur, opened a banh mi sandwich shop. Wan's writings have appeared in the Wall Street Journal, where I discovered her wonderful essay, A Candy from Mars and America's Sweetness, the New York Times, and Forbes. She now lives in New Jersey with her husband and children. And Wan made a special trip with her family to Washington to appear on Press Conference USA. So we have the honor and privilege of welcoming her to the VOA broadcast studio in Washington. Wan Ngo Yusadi, welcome to the program.
Carol, thank you so much for having me on this program. And Minh, thank you so much for joining us. Growing up in Vietnam and listening to Voice of America with my father at night, with our whole family actually at night, it's a tremendous honor for me to be here sitting next to you as a guest. And it means so much to me.
Well, it's so significant to us as well. You have no idea. And I also want to welcome my colleague Minh Thao from the Vietnamese service and congratulate you on this beautifully written memoir. It's so moving, and amid so much heartbreak and struggle, you write with great humor even. We're going to talk about the funny parts later. I was so impressed with your extraordinary command of the English language. I think many native-born Americans would be envious of your skills.
True.
So let me ask you, Wan, why now? I mean, you and your family were among the so-called boat people escaping the repressive North Vietnamese regime during the 1980s by boat, first to the refugee camp in Malaysia, until you were able to immigrate to the United States. You were so young when Saigon fell, and yet you write in such detail about your memories. How were you able to summon so many details about your life in Saigon, then the countryside where you were exiled?
I think certain childhood memories that mean so much to us just stayed in our mind very strongly. And I think in writing the memoir, I thought back about that time. But to get the details, I have the fortune of having six older siblings, and I spoke to them. And of course, my knowledge of Vietnamese history is a bit limited. So I did learn a lot about Vietnamese history through research. And so that helps a lot.
Well, I took away from this memoir, which I recommend to everyone to read, if they can get it on Amazon, or how could they get the book?
Yes, the book is available on Amazon.
Because it's really a testimony to your and your family's extraordinary resilience, courage to get this far, to come to this country. Of course, as you said, and I said in the introduction, I was drawn to your work by your reference to VOA and M&M's, the iconic American candy, in this op-ed that I found in the Wall Street Journal. And I want to quote what you said. You said that your father was glued to the battery-powered shortwave radio listening to Voice of America, and that you thought the acronym VOA was a Vietnamese word. And that you said that it was the only program that you knew of that was delivering forbidden news of the world beyond Vietnam. Talk about how significant VOA was to your dad and your family.
I think under communist Vietnam, the only news that was available was from the government, and it was often delivered over loudspeakers in public spaces. And so to get some kind of accurate assessment, the VOA really was the only choice. And there was a long list of things that were banned, and music, art, anything about the West. And VOA, with this talk of Mỹ, oh, Liên Hiệp Quốc, America, Australia, the United Nations, it was definitely on top of that list. And so for me, it was exciting because we were doing something very surreptitious at night. So Well, we would listen to the radio, but always listening for footsteps on the outside. So anytime when we thought we hear footsteps, my father would turn off the radio and put it away.
Let me turn to my lovely colleague, Min Dao, for a question.
Yes, it sounds very familiar to me, coming from a family who also listened to VOA at night, but long before 1975. Actually, my father made us learn English from VOA English and from the BBC. And we continued on the tradition of listening to Voice of America after 75, which we had to do, you know, in hiding, turning the volume very low. So I really know exactly what you were talking about when you talked about your experience listening to VOA with your family. My question now is, when did you know that you want to become a writer? When did you want to put together what you remember from your childhood and put it into a memoir?
I think with immigration, the subject of such intense debate in America, it's really important that these firsthand accounts be told and be heard. It's often said that immigrants are the voiceless, but it's not really. It's often that actually, in Vietnamese families, we're quite loud. And that's, and that's one of the first things I learned when we first came to the United States, that, and this is not in any cultural lessons, that Americans speak at a much softer volume. So it's not that we don't speak, it's just that often the immigrants' voices are not heard. But I have to admit that I came to writing this memoir by chance. 8 years ago, my father passed away, and his death has a tremendous impact on me. So I decided that I would write an article about his life. And so 5 years ago, on the anniversary of his death, just on a whim, I sent the article to various newspapers, and the Wall Street Journal picked it up and published it for Father's Day. The editor was very kind, and he suggested afterwards that perhaps I should consider expanding it into a memoir. And over the years, my husband had always told me that. He said that you should write this down for the children, for the next generations. But I had never thought of myself as a writer, and it took me so long to write the article about my father. But with that encouragement from the editor, I decided to give the book a try.
Short break, right back. You're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. We're talking with Wan No Yusadi, author of the memoir of Monkey Bridges and Banh Mi Sandwiches from Saigon to Texas. When Saigon fell to communist North Vietnam in 1975, hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese refugees fled the country in the ensuing years aboard overcrowded ships to reach asylum. However, because these boats were not built for dangerous seas, between 200,000 and 400,000 Vietnamese are estimated to have died during these risky voyage attempts. In the 1980s alone, the United States took in approximately 230,000 Vietnamese refugees, among them Wan No Yusadi. Vietnamese immigrants and their descendants live in communities throughout the United States. They have contributed significantly to America's diversity and prosperity and have become an integral part of the American multicultural mosaic. Now back to our special guest, Wan No Yusadi, and my co-host, Min Dao, editor in VOA's Vietnamese service. Wan, I want to ask you about the title. I'd like you to talk about it, because I think if you talk about the meaning of the title of Monkey Bridges and Banh Mi Sandwiches, we'll all get a greater sense of the journey that you,
sure,
that you made.
Right. I think the title spans the two worlds that occupy my childhood. Monkey Bridges is a very iconic image of the Mekong Delta of Vietnam. It's a bridge that usually made up just one bamboo rod spanning a stream. And then Banh Mi Sandwiches is a sandwich shop that my father opened when we came to the United States. And it's where I spent most of my childhood outside of school helping my parents. And so I feel like this title just ties up the two worlds and talks about the experience of a person displaced from home, a refugee, and an immigrant experience.
Wan, your book is divided into before and after the fall of Saigon, and you talk also about divisions in the family. Your father was an entrepreneur against the North Vietnamese, communist North Vietnamese, where one of his brothers sided with North Vietnam.
Right.
So there was those divisions. And then you talk about your life in the countryside, the transition from his auto parts business, where he was considered, you know, a bourgeois, right, you know, to the fruit orchard. What was it like in this countryside of Vietnam under communism? What was the biggest challenge for you as a child during this abrupt transition?
We moved to the countryside when my father was close to 50, and my mom was in her 40s. For me, I was just 8. So for me, the transition was more of a city life to a place with no electricity, no water, and all we had was nature offered. But what I also saw is that the people were not doing very well under communism. The ideals of communism, all of that, I didn't really follow. But the realities I did witness in that the rice harvest plummeted because people had to have all the lands collectivized and turned over to the government. And, you know, the ideal of from each according to his ability and to each according to his need, it didn't work out in practice. And people didn't work hard. There's no reason to contribute any more than the neighbors. And so there was a lot of poverty. And our village went from hunger, I would say, to the edge of famine. And so life was very difficult. And people did everything they could just to find food for the next meal.
Indeed, and you document that so eloquently in your book, Mindao.
How did that experience inform you or affect you and influence the way you write and live?
I think even though life was very hard, I think it shows me that when things are difficult, we are really tested. And it's hard to say what we do in certain circumstances. People stole, you know, they did things that were not very, that people wouldn't do in time of abundance. But I think for me, come from all of that, I felt really a sense of understanding for people, that circumstances force you to do things that perhaps in other times you wouldn't be very proud of.
I guess it would affect your parents more and the way they conduct themselves later on in the U.S. when they have more opportunity to fend for themselves. Is that right?
And I understand that, you know, that freedom is really important. You know, when people are forced to do certain things, it's people want autonomy. They want to be able to work hard and see the results of your work. And I think for my family and lots of other people who come to the U.S., I think that that sense of opportunities and freedom really manifests itself after having been through living under communism.
So you were 4 when Saigon fell to the communist north. You were 8 when your family were forced to go to the new economic zones that we say in Vietnamese. How did that experience inform you as a writer right now, you know, in your memoirs? I can see the influence of your father struggling to provide for his family. How does that affect you as a writer? And in the writing of this book, this beautiful book that I couldn't put down.
I think it shows, in a way, it affects me in that I didn't think I could be a writer. So when we came to the United States, we really had to do everything we could to make a living. And the idea of being a writer never occurred to me. I didn't know anybody who was a writer and made a living out of it. So that idea just vanished from my thought. And so it's from, a direct impact of my writing, that experience had the opposite effect. It's only after I had children and that I had time and that I didn't think I had to write to make a living that I really wrote.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our guest is Juan No Usadi, author of Monkey Bridges and Banh Mi Sandwiches, From Saigon to Texas, a memoir about her life as an immigrant from Vietnam. I'm Carol Castiel, along with Minh Dao, editor and broadcaster in VOA's Vietnamese service. And this is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Now here's a shout out to all our listeners in Vietnam as a tribute to our guest who remembered how her father listened to VOA in the late 1970s via battery-powered shortwave radio, which, given censorship and jamming in many countries to this day, is still one of the most reliable delivery systems of objective news and analysis. But if you want to hear your name on the air, please give us feedback on this show. Send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page at Carol Castiel VOA. Well, Juan No Usadi, let me turn now to your American experience and your time in Texas, because as I said to you earlier, your article in the Christian Science Monitor, Learning English Withdrawal, which you, of course, talk about in the book, it just had me
you know, falling over with laughter. It was just amazing, hilarious how you, you know, learned, as you said, English with a drawl, with a Texas drawl, that something that your landlord said to you was barely intelligible.
Right.
But he was really asking his wife, Loretta, to come out and see the new tenants. Tell me that phrase that you thought,
actually,
what he said.
You know, it's one of those phrases that I can hear in my head, but it's just, I cannot reproduce it. But I can hear so clearly. But it, what it is really a jumble of words that I think a few were still stuck in his throat somewhere. But
I couldn't stop laughing, too.
But from him, I really have to say, I learned a lot. It was the best ear training an English speaker could ever ask for. Once I understood him, I knew I was good in English.
But you don't have a drawl yourself, I see.
No, I don't. I did. But since we now live in New Jersey, you know, it got diluted somewhat.
So talk about your transition and your life in America. You know, going to school, the anecdotes were quite interesting, how you had to deal with bullies and, you know, other types of behavior. That must have been a real test for you as well. And when did you decide to, or I'm not even sure if you, like you said, you decided to write later on in life. So I'm not even sure your major was something else in college eventually. Talk about that.
Well, I grew up with two brothers, and they have an engineering mind. And so in deciding what to do, I thought I'll be in engineering too. But my mind really doesn't turn that way. And so in college, I tried that, and that didn't work. So I turned to the next thing. So it was economics. So I tried that. So that's what I studied. And I worked for a few years in management consulting. And then I had children, and I stayed home. And it's like I said, it's only in that downtime that I read a lot. And I didn't think anything of writing, that writing came about.
Have you been back to Vietnam since the reunification?
Yes. When I finished college in 95, I had the wonderful opportunity to go back with my father. And it was a very poignant moment for me to be with him, to go back to the orchard where we grew up, and to meet some of the neighbors who, you know, the neighbors and friends were there. And it was just a few years after President Clinton normalized relations in Vietnam. And so the people were doing much better. And some even had electricity. So it was very heartening for me to see that.
Mindo.
I'm most interested in the way you so lovingly write about your dad and your mom and the determination that your mom demonstrated, you know, in trying to learn English and speak for herself.
Right.
Talk to us about that.
There's another funny anecdote in that regard, right? She says, I'm not interesting.
Right.
But she really meant to say, I'm not interested, when she had telemarketers call her.
It's a very common mistake.
And I think for Vietnamese speakers, and I think it's, you know, interesting, interested, annoyed, and annoying are interchangeable. When I speak to a lot of my relatives now, they still say that, you know. And so, for instance, my mom, I came up with a trick for her. I told her, you know, anything that starts out with I should end with it, E-D, and anything that starts with it just end with ing. So that helped. So after that, she stopped pronouncing herself boring or not interesting. So, I think, you know, growing up, and I think for me and lots of Vietnamese children, this sense of, you know, indebtedness to your parents, and it's just drilled into us. I write lovingly at my parents, but I don't think it's unusual for a lot of Vietnamese to feel that way towards the parents.
It's uncanny how much I can see of my own father in the way you write about your father. You know, so much so that, you know, except for a few changes like location, my father came from Bắc Ninh and yours from Taiping,
right?
Also from the north. He also went to France to study. So both fathers, you know, the way he talks, the way he conducts himself,
right.
I can see my own father in there. And it was so gratifying for me.
Right.
Thank you.
How is it that you chose or went to Texas? Why Texas? Did other family members go there first? Is that why?
Right. I think I have a cousin who was already there. He was a foreign student, an exchange student, and in the U.S. before, in the 70s. And when South Vietnam collapsed, he chose to stay. And he had a job in Texas, and he was our sponsor, and that's how we ended up there. And a lot of Vietnamese actually ended up where we were because I think the U.S., they scattered refugees across, I mean, immigrants across America. And a lot of the immigrants found Texas weather to be very similar to Vietnam. And with the fishing and shrimping industry, they asked others to come and to the area. So Texas has a flourishing Vietnamese community.
But you were in a sense refugees.
We were refugees, right.
And became immigrants because you settled here
permanently.
What is the name of the town again?
It's Port Arthur, Texas. It's a small town in southeast Texas, and it's part of something called the Golden Triangle, which includes Beaumont and Orange.
Okay. Well, when is it that you made the move to New Jersey?
11 years ago. My husband works, has a job, and he was transferred to New Jersey. And so we moved up here.
What was your childhood like growing up in Houston as a daughter of a Vietnamese refugee family?
I grew up in Port Arthur, Texas, that's when we first arrived. And, you know, when we first came to the U.S., what's most striking for me was the first time that I felt different, because in Vietnam and in refugees camp are all around me, everybody was Vietnamese, and we all had black hair. It's in the U.S. that, I saw different people of different races. And I remember at the airport, I saw a little girl who's blonde, and it just seemed unbelievable to me that white people came in miniature versions. And so, and everything in the U.S. just seems bigger and cleaner. And as I mentioned before, people just speak at a much softer volume. And so...
Oh, than the Vietnamese.
Yes.
Because we have a reputation of being loudmouths.
Oh, Vietnamese are a very boisterous group. We like to talk and, you know, and so...
Well, speaking of being Vietnamese, and so many Vietnamese refugees like yourself came over, the boat people, and they have contributed so much to this country. How do you think you and your fellow Vietnamese may have even changed the face of America? And then how has America, in a sense, changed you?
I think America is a land, you know, of course, is a beacon of hope for many around the world. And it's a place where I think people decide to leave everything they know and to uproot their lives to come here. And I think with the belief that in America, if you work hard, you can make something of your lives. And every aspect of America is, you can see immigrants' contribution in every aspect. You know, you in Washington, D.C., as I walked around, the food trucks, the nail shop, the donut shops, is the immigrants, you know, work there. They are the foundation of this country, and they are what make this country great.
And how do you think being in America has changed you, your worldview, your, you know, behavior and so forth?
I think being America, it gives me a tremendous sense of appreciation of what peace is, what an incredible privilege it is to live in a place where your rights are respected, where there's no fighting, there's, you know, where you don't, you're not afraid for your life, that my children can go to school and that there's enough food. I think just that sense, I carry that with me all the time. And I think if I didn't, and it might sound corny and cliche, but I do walk around and I do feel that it's really a wonderful place to be in America.
How do you define yourself as a refugee, a Vietnamese American, a Texan,
a New Jerseyan?
How do you define yourself? At any stage of your life, do you feel like you have an identity crisis?
I see. I have to say, of all the things I have, I truly don't think of myself in a certain way. And I feel that, and I think in talking about the book and connecting with the people, taking apart the superficiality of what our lives is, we all share the same feelings, that sense of loss, of trying to find a footing in a new home, the discovery of a new place. We all share that. And I think I feel that way as a Vietnamese refugee coming to the U.S. And then I also feel that way as leaving my parents' home, getting married, and having children. So I think these struggles we feel all the time. You don't have to be an immigrant moving from one country to the next. And so the identities are so, there's so many. And so...
That's a very good point that you make, Juan, because I think we can all have multiple identities.
Right.
And there's nothing contradictory about that.
Right.
You're Vietnamese, you're American,
right.
You're Texan, and it all they all
and
work
actually
together.
my husband is Jewish and I'm married and I raised my children Jewish, and
is
so
that
that's
right?
A big part of my life, and I really don't feel contradictions. I feel like it's we all have that, and you know, and it's
we do, but I think there's a tendency that we're supposed to define ourselves. Nowadays we were seeing more ethnocentrism, but I think it's better that we just see ourselves and accept ourselves with all these multiple identities.
What an interesting combination, you know. But this interview doesn't come at a better time when, you know, there is a refugee crisis.
Around
the world, and especially here in America.
Right. And I think Bonita and I would really have much in common. We all want to live in a place that's free of warfare, that we can work hard and our children can have an education. And we all want to work and really contribute to society. And I think that's a basic human desire.
Indeed. What are the lessons that you want people to derive from your memoir about the hardship, the fleeing of repression, the deprivation, and then, you know, coming to America?
I think if there's one lesson that I want... not a lesson, but I guess one commonality that recurs in all the stories in my memoir is the understanding between people. I think in the countryside, I didn't know the people, but as I got to know them, I realized they had the same fears and anxieties as I did. And when we came to America, even our landlords, who I couldn't understand, and who I felt was such a different world for me. But in the end, when I got to know them better, I realized they had the same fear that I did. You know, when he was very gruff and not very nice to us.
Your landlord.
Yes. It was because he didn't think we would pay. But then after I got to know him, you know, actually I saw that he and my father were very similar. Both were kind of, you know, reserved men who don't talk much, but they have a love for their family and they try to provide for their family. And so I think that through all of my stories, I feel like if somehow we're able to connect with somebody, we see that we have much more in common than our differences.
So where to from now? Do you have more books in mind?
How about translating the book, maybe even
yes.
in Vietnamese? Or tell us how people can obtain the book specifically, because I really highly recommend that everybody read it.
Oh, thank you, Carol. The book is now available on Amazon. And so that's and my husband really encourages me to do an audiobook. So I'm working on that. And so as far as a second book, I'm afraid they're at least not about my story. I feel like I felt like the first-hand account of the Vietnamese boat people experience should be told and heard. And I wanted to do that, and I did that. But after that, I think I'm finished. Hopefully, I'll find something else, another topic that's of interest to write about, but not about my life.
But before you wrote your book, did you read about other books that refugees wrote about their experience?
Yes. Before I wrote the book, I read a lot of memoirs just across the board. I really like Andrew Solomon's books about Far From a Tree, about children that are very different from their parents. And I wrote works from other Vietnamese authors, Andrew Pham, The Catfish and Mandala, Andrew Lam's The Perfume River. And recently I read The Refugees by Viet Thanh Nguyen, and who just won the Pulitzer Prize. So those influenced my work.
Well, again, I would recommend everybody to get a copy of the book because it is so inspiring. And of course, talk about the experience with the M&Ms. We talked about VOA, but your experience with the iconic candy M&Ms.
Oh,
as we close.
Oh, well, M&M definitely was a great joy of my life. In the countryside of Vietnam, we didn't have much sugar. You know, out in the orchard, you just cannot find just pure sweet sugar. And I have siblings who lived in America who had escaped Vietnam and came to the U.S. while I was still in the countryside. And on the rare occasion, a gift of them would arrive. And one of those gifts was M&Ms. And when I first tasted it, I thought it has to be food from the heavens. My brother, 2 years older than I, we would eat 3 pieces each a day. And for however long that lasted, that was the highlight of our day. And, you know, and since then, I have many other foods, but that definitely was one of the pleasures that I think back often.
And you still eat them to this day and share them with your children?
I do. In M&M, in our home, M&M's home, a very special place.
The book is Of Monkey Bridges and Banh Mi Sandwiches. The author, Wan No Yusadi. Wan, we can't thank you enough for sharing your beautiful story with us. Thank you for coming in, making this special trip to Washington to be with us.
Thank you so much, Carol, for having me. And as I said, it's an especially poignant honor to be here as a guest on VOA.
Thank you so much, Wan.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guest. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. And joining me on the program was Minh Dao, editor and broadcaster in VOA's Vietnamese service. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.